Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, two for the price of one today. In a while, we're going to hear from a medic who was captured near the end of the war in Europe and put on a forced march with other prisoners, many of whom had been in captivity for quite some time. For now, we'll pick up where we left off with Donald Newsom, originally from the small town of Jervis, Oregon. He joined the Navy at age 17, and he was 2 weeks shy of his 19th birthday on March 19th, 1945, a day that anybody who served on the Franklin will never forget. The carrier was within 50 miles of the Japanese mainland and had more than 30 airplanes fueled, armed, and warming up on the flight deck. They would turn into accelerant for a massive fire started by two 500-pound bombs dropped from a Japanese plane. We heard Mr. Newsom explain how he felt that blast from below deck in the inert gas pump room where he was stationed. When we left off, he had just emerged topside on a once mighty ship that was now listing badly and burning almost everywhere.
Our air officer, Commander Taylor, came through there and he said, he come up to me, he says, you look like a strong, strapping young fellow. He says, I got six patients up here with flash burn from the bomb, and just it burns their skin. Have you ever seen flash burn? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they were walking, but they were peeled their skin because they was back where some of those things had exploded. They would walk out of there. Santa Fe would come in alongside, and it'd get too hot for her back there on the half end. And because she was exposed to, well, all that fire, anything is a fire, two-thirds or three-fourths of it is a fire, of the Franklin. When he came up to me, he said, I got six walking patients up here. Hope these guys get over on the Santa Fe. They would run the lifeline, tie it to a rope. The Santa Fe set down 20, 30 feet lower than the flight deck of the Franklin.
So you had to load them onto that line and give them a little shove?
Well, yes. Or you walk up there and get down in that catwalk. But the Santa Fe's in so close that she would hit some of those catwalks, you know, and just upend them right up on, because she's staying in there close to take off casualties.
Have you ever considered how much worse the damage would have been or the casualties would have been if the Santa Fe weren't there?
Oh, yeah. She was wonderful help. I know that. And when in later years with the reunions, when we'd have them wherever they were, there'd be usually some Santa Fe boys there. And they're just like a brother.
Well, speaking of, you mentioned your friend from California who you had known from training in Farragut, Idaho. Do you remember his name?
Yeah, Herbert Melville Owen.
And you mentioned that you had just said goodbye to him. What happened to him?
He went in the water. He was blown off. Then they picked him up with a destroyer, and then he got transferred to a troop transport, which had gathered a bunch of those boys. And I didn't know for a week whether he was alive or not, you know. But we had just had chow together, breakfast down in the cafeteria, and then walked out of there, and I feel this rumble from starting to, she was already been hit and starting to blow apart.
How long was it from the time your ship was hit until you finally felt like things were safe again?
The ship was hit at around 8 o'clock, 4 or 5 hours later. It was about 5 hours, I think.
Longest 5 hours of your life?
I never put any of that stuff into perspective at all.
What's the most amazing part of that whole story to you when you think back and you think about what you experienced personally and the rest of what you know now?
The question goes into my mind, why? Why did it spare me? And these other 900 guys are at the bottom of the sea or, you know, gone. So that's what I think about. Try not to think about it. There's some other stories, too, with that. The forward elevator to run an aircraft up and down from the hangar deck to the flight deck, just in front of that is the forecastle where the officers' quarters are. Went walking around up there. That was the only part that wasn't a fire. I don't know how many people was up there, but there was a bunch of them, the boys, you know, those that got out of from somewhere. My buddy that I went to Farragut with, he jumped out from our compartment. Our compartment was one that had a few man portholes big enough to get a crawl a man through. And he got out that way. He didn't have to go and hit the water. The destroyers was in picking boys up here and there. That some of them got trapped back to the aft end, couldn't get forward. And then the planes that was on the flight deck were running, operates. They had the engines running and the strike to launch, 30 aircraft ready to go. You come out of there and there's all this mayhem. You can walk right into a prop that's running because there's boys, the plane captains, he's back there with his pilot. And then you have the air officer up there that's sending those planes off, but he spaces them out. Well, he only got one plane off out of that group.
And that happened to some people where they walked into the props?
Yeah.
Yeah, a catastrophic day, catastrophic scene. And when you talk about nearly 900 who died, I'm sure if you didn't know some of them well, you certainly knew some of those guys, right?
Yeah, you know of them. Even those in my division that was clear to the aft end, there was a pump room like where I was forward, and there was one aft, the same thing. But I didn't see those guys that much.
You mentioned that question, why me? Why did I survive? 70 years, have you ever come up with an answer?
No.
Some of the guys I've talked to who've lived through experiences like that speak of survivor's guilt, or feeling sometimes not guilt but obligation to make their life count because they know they could have been one of those who died. Have you ever experienced emotions or feelings like that?
Yeah, but not that graphic. I wouldn't be one to compose something like that.
You know, today, 70 years after World War II, we can talk about a number, 406,000 Americans who died in the war, and we can look at a wall of gold stars, the National World War II Memorial. But a good chunk of that came that day on your ship. How do you think those men should be remembered?
The respectful things that they do on holidays and the like of this, they're given notoriety. Same thing with the other wars. As somebody once said, war is hell, and that's no lie.
Well, I'm sure you've been asked a lot about the events of March 19th, but the war was far from over. Anything from that point till the Japanese surrender that stands out for you, or you think we ought to know?
No, we had them. By that point, they were pretty well squelched down. They were overwhelmed, and we were part of the overwhelming.
Was that a memorable day when you found out that Japan had surrendered?
Yeah, we got moved back to Pearl. From the time the ship was hit, it took us 2 weeks to get from out there and back in to Pearl. Well, the ship didn't move. Well, they towed it for a day or two.
And you were still on it while they towed it?
No.
They had gotten you off. Did you go on the Santa Fe too, or what?
I went down the lifeline, you know, line about this big around, squeezed that line till I thought I was going to squeeze it all.
Well, why don't you tell everybody why? What happens if you don't squeeze?
Fall in between them. Whether the Santa Fe was in line alongside the Franklin, and the rough sea out there, that not rough, but rough. Why, when the Santa Fe, and then it gets so hot, there was a fire, and they'd have to pull away a little bit every once in a while. But then they bring that thing back in and bang right into the side of the Franklin in order to get up there. Some guys would walk to the edge there and then jump off and get, you know, anything to get out of there.
Well, and that's what strikes me, because, you know, these days people will pay big money to go hold on to a zip line and go for a little ride. But this was no joyride for you. You've got a burning ship that you think is going down, and that's why you're squeezing so tight, because your life's at stake, right?
That answers it.
Have you ever done anything like that since?
No. No.
When you went down that that lifeline, you had gloves on?
Yeah, flash-proof glove in case it would be a hit, another explosion or something.
So that would protect your hands if there were an explosion, but they weren't made for holding on to a lifeline.
No, so I squoze for dear life, squeezed.
So those gloves were a problem when you're holding on to this line? They made you go too fast, or what?
Well, they just, that would be the word, I guess, describe it, yeah.
Because you have a pretty vertical angle between where you're coming off the Franklin and where the Santa Fe was.
60, 70 degrees.
So if you come down that line too fast, you might get killed doing that.
Well, if you don't make it, you go down between the two ships, which were side by side. This was the problem.
You might get squeezed between the hulls of the two ships.
Well, some did.
That's one of those, the cure can be worse than the sickness situations, huh?
Yeah. But the boys on the Santa Fe would stand on top of that 6-inch gun turret. It's pretty flat, you know. And they had a landing there for about 2 or 3 different spots where these guys would slide down, save of quite a few.
How big of a relief was it for you when you were safely aboard the Santa Fe?
Oh, it took a while to get over that. Didn't even think about what it was. I just was thankful.
And when you got off that ship, did you think it was going to sink?
Yeah.
Well, as you said, a lot has been said, a lot has been written about your ship, the Franklin. But you were on it. You lived through all of this. You knew some of those guys that died. You had to evacuate yourself, holding on as tight as you could to get onto that Santa Fe. How do you think people should remember the Franklin? What's your ship's legacy?
I don't know. It just hope nobody, but you say hope that they don't have these situations anymore, but as long as this world is afloat, why, there's going to be problems.
Well, before I forget, I want to say thank you for serving our country, and thank you for giving us a look into that historic day on the Franklin. What would you say you're most thankful for?
Being here today. Yeah. Why me? I ended up, I had about 5 buddies that was fairly close when we was on the ship. They were in different divisions and different things. And then we went through life and to these reunions and all. I'd see them every so often, you know. And that was always enjoyable. They're all gone. I'm the only one left of those 5. You ever heard of Father O'Callaghan? He was a Catholic priest and was on the ship. And he was quite a doer. Fear nothing. He just out up there on that flight deck going through these boys and talking to them with their rights, you know. And pretty brave Catholic priest.
So he's one of the guys that you look at as heroic that day.
Yeah. He didn't pay any attention to where he walked or where he went, or where he went up and knelt down in a circle of about 50 guys that was on stretchers and stuff on the forward part of the flight deck, which is our only area we had. It wasn't a fire.
Yeah, and you weren't the only one who saw Father O'Callaghan as a hero. He was originally offered the Navy Cross, and he turned it down. I have a photo up at hometownheroesradio.com of Father Joseph T. O'Callaghan receiving the Medal of Honor from President Harry Truman, because after a public outcry, the president decided that brave priest deserved our highest military honor. Here's an excerpt from his Medal of Honor citation. A valiant and forceful leader, calmly braving the perilous barriers of flame and twisted metal to aid his men and his ship, Lieutenant Commander O'Callaghan groped his way through smoke-filled corridors to the open flight deck and into the midst of violently exploding bombs, shells, rockets, and other armament. With the ship rocked by incessant explosions, with debris and fragments raining down and fires raging in ever-increasing fury, he ministered to the wounded and dying, comforting and encouraging men of all faiths. He organized and led firefighting crews into the blazing inferno on the flight deck. He directed the jettisoning of live ammunition and the flooding of the magazine. He manned a hose to cool hot, armed bombs rolling dangerously on the listing deck, continuing his efforts despite searing, suffocating smoke, which forced men to fall back gasping and imperiled others who replaced them. Serving with courage, fortitude, and deep spiritual strength, Lieutenant Commander O'Callaghan inspired the gallant officers and men of the Franklin to fight heroically and with profound faith in the face of almost certain death, and to return their stricken ship to port. The Franklin would return home, and so did Donald Newsom. His 3 kids, his grandkids, and great-grandkids, they're all thankful for that. And one more note on the USS Franklin. We talk so often to the veterans on this program about what could have been, how one moment, one twist of fate, or in the eyes of so many, an act of divine intervention could change everything. In that light, I think you'll appreciate this story, bearing in mind that the only ship to lose more sailors in World War II than the Franklin did was the USS Arizona at Pearl Harbor. There was a 34-year-old lieutenant who had been assigned to the Franklin. He'd been a high school basketball coach in the Midwest before the war. On the day he was supposed to ship out, his appendix ruptured, and he was forced to stay behind as his fellow sailors headed out. The man who took his place on the Franklin's crew was a good friend and fraternity brother of his named Freddie Stallcup. He had played quarterback in college at Purdue. Freddie was killed in that Japanese attack on March 19, 1945. He died in the place of his good friend, a man we know as the greatest college basketball coach of all time. Yes, John Wooden's appendicitis saved his life. Wooden never would have coached a single game for UCLA, let alone win 10 national championships. I'll let you soak that one in as we prepare for our final break. When we come back, we'll go from Navy to Army and hear from one of Donald Newsom's neighbors in Oregon, a medic from Kansas with a pretty compelling story of his own. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's RV Country within driving distance of this radio station. But really, it doesn't matter where you live because Paul Everett has a fly and buy program that will fly you to any of his locations to buy your new RV. It's one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Serving RVers for 55 years, you'll find Paul Everett's RV Country throughout the West and online at rvcountry.com. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank, it's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328. Paul Everett's RV Country has 8 locations in 5 western states, including Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, right off the I-5, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. Over 55 years of experience serving the needs of RVers across the country and proud supporters of Hometown Heroes. Find a location near you by visiting rvcountry.com.